By the grace of God, it's good to be here today, to be together. Thank you for coming. Thank you for those that are visiting with us and being a part of our assembly and singing together and studying together with us. We appreciate you being here. I think it was about Thursday evening, Betsy said she was looking forward to some cooler weather. I said, just hang on, about Monday morning it'll be 25. She looked at me like, are you kidding me? Enjoy this time of year, enjoy the fall, and still some pretty leaves around. I hope you're taking that in while you drive. Appreciate this glorious place that the Lord has allowed us to live by His mercy. I'm very thankful for that. I am. And I know you are too. We spent some time today. Thank you, Marlon, for putting some songs together and singing us and getting us thinking about it. You've helped me already picking these songs out. I thought about this morning. I said, you got any songs about Nebuchadnezzar? I didn't think that was going to fly, so made it a little easier for me. We'll talk about Daniel today. And I would dare say that just about everybody in this audience knows a good bit about Daniel, so we will not look at all the details. And of course, that's a picture that just depicts one aspect of the story. Perhaps the one that we're most familiar with is being cast in to the lion's den. I will say it now, I may say it later. The reason I appreciate that picture is because most pictures depict him as a young boy. He was 70 to 80 years old, and that is a conservative age when he was thrown into that lion's den. Why was he there? How did he end up in Babylon? He was a young man growing up in the southern kingdom of Judah, maybe even in and around Jerusalem. Because of the gross immorality, the unfaithfulness, the rebellious spirit even in the leaders, God even had to decide to punish his own people and allow them to be taken captive by the country of Babylon. That stirred the heart of Habakkuk, who was a contemporary of Daniel, somewhat. When Habakkuk asked the Lord, are you going to use a nation more ungodly than us to punish us? And that's exactly what the Lord did. Habakkuk couldn't understand that. By the end of that discussion with the Lord, he was silent and willing to accept God's judgment on the matter. And so there were about three times that Nebuchadnezzar came with his army to the city of Jerusalem, and the first one was about 600 years before Jesus, 606. And Daniel was one of the young men that was taken as a captive to this foreign country. So he's uprooted, taken to a land that is radically different than his own, even though his own was one of religious and political and moral turmoil in its last days. And he found himself in the kingdom, the capital city of the greatest country in the world at that time, and that was Babylon. And the king was a man by the name of Nebuchadnezzar, famous enough that even Saddam Hussein, while he was ruling the country of Iraq, which is present-day Babylon, was intending to rebuild this old city, and who considered himself, and we weren't surprised by the madman that he was, considered himself to be the second coming of this Nebuchadnezzar. That he was going to make Babylon great again. What about this Nebuchadnezzar? What was it like living in a country in which Nebuchadnezzar was the king? Was he a proponent of godly family values, of Old Testament values concerning the home? He had two wives, but history tells us, maybe even about the same time. One was an Egyptian, the other was a Persian. I don't know if they were former models or not, but they were his wives. I don't know what Nebuchadnezzar's view was on gay marriage or same-sex marriages back then. They had homosexuality back then. The old law gave prohibitions concerning the matter. And their history tells us that the nations and the kings were proponents of that kind of behavior, sadly enough. I don't have any idea what he thought about men using women's restrooms. Hopefully he didn't have to deal with that issue. Was his name on some of the buildings around Babylon? Nebuchadnezzar was extremely proud of the city that he had built. He made Babylon great. One historian tells us that 9/10 of the ruins, or 19/20 of all the ruins found in Babylon, had his name on every brick. And so he made this city great, made the nation great. Thought of himself as a great one. Chapter 4 and verse 30 of Daniel, we find a man who was very proud of himself and proud of his abilities to lead this nation. Turning over to chapter 4 and verse 30. The king spoke and said, "Is this not great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling, for my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty?" So a man with a great deal of pride and arrogance. And yet he was going to learn a valuable lesson shortly after that passage is mentioned. I don't know if he built any casinos or not. I don't know what the government of Babylon thought about legalized gambling. We live in a country today that the government is a proponent of legalized gambling. You can buy lottery tickets in the name of the government and do that to support our education, we're told. I don't know if Nebuchadnezzar had any legal problems with his own university or the universities that he sent these young men to. But I do know he was not a godly man. The time that Daniel found himself in Babylon. Did he have a ruler, a chief administrator? Chapter 2 and verse 48, who listed the Bible as his favorite book on his Facebook page? Did he list Genesis 18:19 as his favorite quote? "For I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that he may keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken of him." Gives you a little bit of hope, doesn't it? Maybe the vice president could be a Daniel. In our present political circumstances. Daniel had 44 years to work with Nebuchadnezzar. To let God work through him on him. I'm hopeful. I don't know what Daniel thought when he first got to the kingdom. What did God end up doing with Nebuchadnezzar? He used Daniel to lead him to a faith in God. That he valued the things of God. It took some great humbling in his life. But at least at the end of chapter 4 and verse 37, with like a madman, he's wandered in the wilderness, let his hair grow, his fingernails, his toenails grow. The dew of the earth falling upon his hair. He came to himself. Came to his senses, Nebuchadnezzar did. In chapter 4 and verse 37, he began to esteem highly the God of Israel, the God of Daniel, the only true and living God. When I read chapter 1, I understand that this world in which Daniel was living was not so much unlike our own. The things that they valued are the things that people today value, our own culture values. The men that they chose, the young men that they chose, tells us what they valued, what they were looking for, what was important to them. And this is a bit of an overlap with some things I suggested to you last week. They were looking for young men in whom there was no blemish, no zits, more importantly, no handicaps, or at least to them perhaps, sadly enough. No handicaps, nothing like some of the children I see on some of these commercials where they're trying to get you to send money to try to help these little children in these hospitals when they're raised with unable to walk or without an arm. There's one very sweet, seemed to be a young lady, urging people to support them with her arm. She was born without one. Babylon wouldn't even chosen them. Good looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand. You know, some people aren't just quicker to understand than others. I know that can be a gift. They had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. They valued nobility. He went and chose some of the young men that were of the noble families, maybe even children of the kings. Had all of these special abilities. They would have the ability to serve in his palace. They would be physically capable of serving. As I suggested to you last Sunday morning, I fear that those are the things that we begin to value living in a culture like ours. Let's make sure that we're like Daniel. This is the world's view of success. You can have all of those things, and one overlying truth of all of this story of Daniel to me is that he was what he was in spite of all of that. In spite of having any nobility, if he was a child of one of the kings, he probably didn't have a father worth even mentioning. He wasn't faithful unless you go all the way back to Josiah. And so I want to share with you today three or four things about the character of Daniel living in an environment not all unlike ours. It may even been, in some sense, I don't know, I won't try to compare it with our own completely. Let's talk about Daniel. Number one, he's a young man that learned to be faithfully content in a set of circumstances that had to be trying and testing to his faith. I don't know where his parents are. I don't know if he had brothers and sisters. I don't know what's happened to the rest of his family. But this living in a completely strange country. God had told them through Jeremiah. Maybe he listened to Jeremiah. Tell them, when you get there, settle down. Settle in the sense that build homes, build vineyards, grow gardens. You're going to be there for a while. You're going to be there for 70 years. Serve the king. Do what he asked. As long as it didn't violate the commands of the Lord. But do what they ask. And it will be well with you. Maybe Daniel said, okay, I'm just going to listen to the Lord. I don't understand it. It's not what I want. But this is where I am. And I'm going to be faithful here where I am. I'm going to be thankful for the things that I'm able to enjoy. That doesn't mean everything was easy for Daniel. We may make the mistake of reading this story and thinking that Daniel had an easy life. I mean, he ended up being one of the high rulers. Well, we know where that ends up. It ends up in that picture. But God saved him. But he still had trials and struggle in his life. Can I put this the way that Paul Earnhardt put it in his own wonderful way sometimes with words? When you think about Daniel not having an easy life, being one of those counselors of the king, Paul said, the wise men of Babylon, of which Daniel was one, had worse job security than Hitler's generals. Their heads were always on the chopping block. Failure was a death sentence. You remember that? That's a part of the story. When the king's wise man could not interpret the dream, they couldn't even tell him what the dream was. He said, you're all going to be dead. Daniel understood that meant him too. He and his companions prayed to God, and God gave Daniel the interpretation of the dream, and he went to Nebuchadnezzar and told him the interpretation of that dream. Paul went on to say, only by utter confidence in God did Daniel live continually with this reality, as he, on God's behalf, spoke some very unpleasant things to kings who had the power to dismiss him permanently. Sometime when your circumstances aren't what you want them to be, God says, I'm still calling you to faithfulness. Daniel had no excuses. He couldn't say, Lord, this is not what I planned. This is not ideal. This is not where we're from. I can't go to the temple to worship. But you can be faithful right where you are. And that's the way we need to be. Even in a set of circumstances, even politically, that may be much unlike anything we've ever experienced in our own lifetime. And challenges that we have to face. challenges this country has to face. Will we be faithful to the Lord? That's what the Lord wants more than anything else. Along with that, he lived life with a purpose. I don't know why he did not agree to eat the meat or drink the wine that he was served, but he refused to do that. And that's honorable. And he did that at great risk. The first risk was the man overseeing him, and he made sure to communicate to him who had committed that. He said to Daniel, I'm the one's in trouble here if you don't eat this food and drink this drink, and you don't look very healthy, and I take you before the king and you look unhealthy compared to everybody else, and the king's going to ask me why, and I'm going to tell him you didn't eat the food, and it's going to be my life. Of course, a little test was given. At the end of the day, they looked just as good or better than everybody else. The fact of the matter, he chose not to. I don't know exactly why. There's some possibilities, but the thing I want you to focus on right now is he chose not to do something that was an edict of the king. Daniel valued the things of God more than the things of men. This may have cost him the position that he would have later on. It didn't. God was with him. And there's a lesson in that. God may be with us when we make the decisions for him. He may leave us where we are and use us for good. Let God do that with us, even in these days. But his mind was set on things above, not on things on the earth. He valued the things of God more than the things of men. He was faithful. He lived a life of purpose in spite of the fact that he was maybe noble, born, gifted. And things did turn out well for him. That's not a promise that it always will for us. When we determine that I'm not going to do something that maybe I've been told to do, that the government allows to do. An interesting illustration here to me. You know, our government allows today, because of a number of laws that have been enacted even in our lifetime, it allows people to do what we believe are things that are sinful. And that's horrible. And we understand we're starting to live in a culture that's different than what we grew up and our grandparents grew up with. But none of those laws mean I have to do any of those things. I still have the choice. Just because a government legalizes immoral behavior doesn't mean I have to engage in it. I don't have to gamble. I don't have to buy lottery tickets. I certainly don't have to practice homosexual relationships because the government is passing legislation that even and leaders promote and praise them. I certainly don't have to have an abortion or encourage anybody else, a girlfriend or a wife, to have an abortion. Because I understand the Bible teaches me that I can live a life of purity through the Lord. I can choose to not engage in intimacy that's only for those who are married lawfully to each other. I can choose not to do that and never put myself in a position of even thinking about having an abortion, even though the government allows it. Yes, I'd like to see that reversed, and if this present leaders are able to do that, wonderful. It'll be a great fight. But the fact of the matter is, there's legislation passed that authorizes it, divorce for any and every cause, makes it easy, no fault. It's not of the Lord, not His will. You know what kind of flew under the radar in this election? You know how many states voted to ratify the use of marijuana for recreational use? Not medical, recreational use. Well, I don't have to smoke it. This may give me a chance to let my light shine in a society that is just obviously has passed laws that we just wonder about. A gospel preacher posted a story recently that in Denver, Colorado, since Colorado legalized the use of marijuana, apparently for, at some point for medical use, I think it goes beyond that, that the crime rate related to marijuana use increased 44% in the city of Denver. Are we surprised? No. There are consequences, and we wish that government would pass laws that would enforce moral issues like this to us. But they're not always going to do that. But I don't have to do that. I can still be that light. I can still be a Daniel. I can still say, no, I am not going to do that. And maybe that's what we need. More people that are willing to say, no, I'm not going to do that. I can say no to drinking and drunkenness, even though the government allows it. You know, the city of Kingston Springs, one of the things that we're given a chance to vote about is whether or not grocery stores could sell wine. So I decided to vote against it. Didn't decide it. I didn't have to think about it. But I kind of smiled. I said, that's probably like somebody at the bottom of Niagara with a gallon bucket trying to throw all that water back over the top edge of the falls. I mean, they're already selling it everywhere else, so it's inevitable going to. But it doesn't mean I have to drink. It doesn't mean I have to be a drunk. It doesn't mean I have to be involved in revelings and banquetings. I can choose to obey the Lord, and I'm going to, and you are too, aren't you? You know the dangers of alcohol, the dangers of drunkenness. Just because the government, well, I can choose to do what's right. And that's what Daniel did. And we can wrestle and we can wring our hands and we can be in all of this angst because of all of these laws the government passes that just leaves us shaking our heads and frustrated, and rightfully so on occasions. But please remember something. Let your light shine. Let your light shine. Daniel, in these circumstances, remained very humble and grateful. In fact, as we'll notice the story here in just a minute, that he continued to be prayerful even when told that it would be unlawful to pray. I don't know if I noticed this. This is one of the wonderful things. I tell you this only because I want to encourage you to study the Bible. But as I was reading Daniel 6 and verse 10, how many times have we read that passage? How many times have we made the point that he prayed facing Jerusalem three times a day, just like he'd always done? But it also says, not only did he pray, but gave thanks before his God. Thanks for what? For living in Babylon? He found reasons to be thankful, even in those circumstances, and even in the set of circumstances which he knew it may cost him his life if they caught him praying. There's no boasting. He always gave God the glory, even when presented to the king with the interpretation of the dreams. He said, this is not me. Don't think that I came up with this myself, the God that I serve. And hopefully every time Nebuchadnezzar was hearing that, and I think he was. The God I serve is the one who gave me these interpretations. Chapter 2 and verse 28. Chapter 2 and verse 30. And by the way, all of that talent that Daniel had, the text tells us that God gave him those things, even his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill and all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. He knew where that came from, and he gave God the credit, gave God the glory. And we understand that even among ourselves, some will have some abilities and talents that are a part of this world that they can still use for the glory of God. Just make sure that you give God the credit. You didn't do it yourself. And obviously the story is that Daniel remained prayerful, even when he knew that a law had been enacted that appealed to the pride of the king, all stirred up because of jealousy. Why in the world are we surprised when envy and jealousy find its way into the political arena and it creates a mess? It's always been that way. Men just can't handle it. And when Daniel started to do well, and when Darius lifted him up and made him ruler over the whole territory of Babylon under his rule, the other fellows beneath him didn't like that. He's not one of us. He's not one of the locals. He's certainly not a Babylonian. And so they began to think about how can we get him to violate his God, because they couldn't even find any fault with him. They couldn't find that he had done anything and violated his God's laws. So he said, we got them. We'll make a law that if you go to anybody besides the king for the next 30 days, if that happens, he gets what? He gets thrown in the den of lions, which mainly simply meant, for they were concerned, you were dead before you hit the ground. What's Daniel do? He keeps praying. Let's keep praying. Yes, the Bible teaches us to pray for those that rule over us, and we must do that. 1 Timothy chapter 2, 1 and 2. Pray for their openness to truth and righteousness and godliness. Our greatest concern as Christians is not economics. I sure hope it's not. Our greatest concern as God's people is the morality of people. We'd like for our leaders to lead us in that regard. Somebody pointed out this will only be the second president that has been divorced. I thought it was interesting. You know who the first one was, don't you? Mr. Reagan. For a lot of you, that probably turned out pretty well. At least in view of some things about him, his character. Maybe we can hope the best and hope for some change. Maybe, again, as I suggested, people around can change, encourage them, be helpful. Be prayerful, though. And don't quit praying. And this is if a law is ever enacted that tells us you cannot do this, that means we will do it if it costs us our life. Will we? Will I? I'd like to be able to answer that with surety. I'm not sure that I can. You know why? Are you praying regularly when there is no law against it? I know sometimes I have to hang my head. We'll continue studying prayer together tonight. It's made me study it some more, and as I've studied them some more, I realize how I have failed to pray to God like Paul did. I want to do better. And I don't have a government telling me right now I can't pray. Now I know certain places, maybe publicly prayers, those are concerns of ours, and I realize that that's not a good sign. We don't appreciate that. I still think a child can pray privately when they eat in schools. You can still pray. And finally, chapter 9. Thank God for stories like Daniel. Because Daniel had to think about the Word of God too. He had to think about how to apply to him. And as a young man, when he first got to Babylon, I don't think this had sunk in. And over time it began to sink in because he remembered the words of Jeremiah, a prophet that he respected, a man speaking for God, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolations of Jerusalem. Daniel's beginning to realize, I know why we're here. And I know how long we're going to be here. I get it. And what did he get? Please listen to some of this. I'm not going to read all of this, but I must read some of it. Here's what he got. At least here's the reaction to what he had come to understand. I set my face toward the Lord God to make requests by prayer and supplications with fasting, sackcloth, and ashes. I prayed to the Lord my God and made confession and said, O Lord, great and awesome God who keeps His covenant and mercy with those who love Him and with those who keep His commandments. We have sinned and committed iniquity. We have done wickedly and rebelled, even by departing from Your precepts and Your judgments. Neither have we heeded Your servants, the prophets, who spoke in Your name to our kings and our princes, to our fathers, and all the people of the land. O Lord, righteousness belongs to You, but to us shame of face as it is this day. To the men of Judah, to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and all Israel, those near and those far off, and all the countries to which You have driven them because of the unfaithfulness which they have committed against You. O Lord, to us belongs shame of face, to our kings, our princes, and our fathers, because we have sinned against you. To the Lord our God belong mercy and forgiveness, though we have rebelled against him. We have not obeyed the voice of the Lord our God to walk in his laws, which he set before us by his servants, the prophets. I'm going to stop there for time's sake, but it continues on almost to the end of the chapter. We have spent the last several weeks and months being told by the candidates all the faults of the other. Horrible commercial in the last couple of days, exposing the ungodly language of one of the candidates, as if the other one, well, I'm done with that. We've been weighing out the lesser of two evils. Which one's less ungodly than the other? Which is going to be the best person to rule the country in spite of their character? People wrestled with that. Been openly critical, and rightly so. Let me tell you something. Daniel found fault with Nebuchadnezzar and even told him. Feared for his life, and he was given an interpretation in chapter 4. He even told Nebuchadnezzar, I hope this is not about you. And he was troubled and anxious and concerned about these messages that God was sending him. And he had to go into the presence of the king and tell him that he needed to repent. You need to break off your sins by being righteous and your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. Verse 27 of chapter 4, he went into the king and told him that. Reminded me of Paul before Felix and telling him what Felix needed to hear. Daniel came to realize in chapter 4 and verse 17 that God allows evil men to rule in the kingdoms of men. The old King James says, base or lowest of men, wicked men to rule. He allows that to happen. Daniel struggled with that like we would. My main point here is Daniel, in spite of all that was going on around him, didn't lose sight of his own sins. The devil's a master of deception and distraction. And he's able to get us so distracted thinking about the faults of others, we can't see our own. This prayer was a penitent prayer. This was no prayer that we're all a bunch of sinners. Forgive us, Lord. We all sin all the time. We do so many things that are wrong. Place for those things to be said. This was a prayer of open confession. Not a public prayer, but a prayer between Daniel and his God. Yes, he knew that all of Judah was subject to the wrath of God because of their unfaithfulness, but he put himself right in there with them. It wasn't they, it was us. We, all of us, have sinned. Daniel had a lot of questions about what God was doing in the nations. He got a lot of visions. Some of which I suggested to you earlier left him troubled. Some of them just plain left him sick. And he went to God and he said, what is this about? What's going to happen to our own people? He was told in chapter 12 and verse 7 that the holy people were going to be destroyed. Judah, Israel, the Jews, Jerusalem. And he said, Lord, when? So he had questions, he had concerns. It's okay. Just like we have. But in chapter 9, his greatest concern at that moment in history was his own sins and the sins of the people. I'm going to remind us as I close today that our greatest concern is not saving America. It's not. Our greatest concern is saving ourselves and the souls of men that will hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. Wherever God allows this nation to go, we still have the greatest cause, the greatest work to do in this world. And that is to talk to people about Jesus. And I will tell you that the doors may be getting ready to open in spite of what we see. The fields may become white to harvest. People will begin to realize that this world is a place of turmoil and trouble and struggles and strife and problems. Even more so. No, now some of them are going to become more rebellious and bitter. I know that. But I think there are going to be some folks who say, is there more than this? Is there something more than the American dream? I sure hope so. Interview with a young lady this week on the news. They're talking about college debt. And there's interviewing her and living with her boyfriend. Anyway, you see what's happening? But I'll tell you, a comment she made was that she said, good job, said, we're just trying to do better than our parents. Isn't that what the dream's all about? And I just sat there and hung my head and said, no, it is not. That's not what you ought to be living for. And that's what we're going to try to do. We reminded ourselves, I'm going to live for Him and try to encourage other people to do the same. Troubling times? Yes, perhaps. But an exciting time to be a follower of Jesus. An exciting time to be a Daniel. A time in which we get to do what's right. We may stand out more than we've ever stood out before. So be it. Let it happen. Who knows who we will influence for good. May God be with us as we live in times like this to remember we have a great servant before us, a man who was honored by God for being a living legend in his own time. Compared him with Job and Noah, Ezekiel did. And I think we can be like him more than we realize. And some of you may already be more like him than even I know. Keep up the good work. Let's do what's right. Song of invitation. If you're not a Christian, please don't die alone. Don't die outside of Christ. Come to Him. Fall at His feet. He's your King. I'm absolutely convinced in my own weak mind that the Bible story is taking place today, that 1 Timothy 6 would not say Jesus is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. It would say He's President of Presidents and Senator of Senators. That's who we get to serve. Let's serve Him. Let's serve Him together, and let's serve Him with great joy.